All right. Hello, everybody. This is Patrick from Sioux Falls Live, and I'm very happy today to be talking to Walter Portz. And why are we talking to Walter Portz? Because Walter Portz is everywhere.
Oh, geez.
Everywhere you run into Walter Portz. Walter, thanks for stopping by for a few minutes.
Yeah, I love it.
So, first of all, a couple things we're going to touch on. Walter's a driving force behind the skate park that's under construction. Walter's the guy who painted the mural at the Levitt. He's an artist about town. Walter's a guy who's been experimenting deeply with AI and art and all kinds of other stuff. And so we're going to talk to kind of all those things because they're all things that are sort of, they're driving Sioux Falls forward. And I like interesting people doing interesting things. So, Walter, give us the capsulized how I became Walter Portz description.
Oh, boy. A nerdy, overly compassionate kid from Wyoming. Moved here as a teenager, had a bit of a rough time here as a teenager. Was like, I got to get the heck out of here. I don't know if we can swear or not.
Short swearing.
Yeah, yeah. No long form swearing here.
Right, right.
Thought Wyoming was the place. Wasn't. Ended up back in Minneapolis for almost 10 years. My wife and I decided to have a kid due to a couple of circumstances, and so we moved back here to do that. Worked retail jobs, started a studio with my degree. I got a degree from the University of Minnesota in photography. My wife and I started a studio. We ran Studio Blue. Along the way, my parents got sick, had to take over their business. You know, life happens. Kids grow up. We took in another kid at 14 years old. And just all along the way, trying to make art, trying to be expressive. You know, I've started some businesses. I've, taken care of dying parents. I've done kind of a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So those just kind of all gel together to put me where I am.
Yeah, and I didn't even mention the business or not. Is it a nonprofit? Maybe for people who are looking for resources to take care of their elderly parents.
It is a business. Yeah. It's called Helen's Plan. It's named after my mom. It's from just from my experience in trying to break apart all the things you have to when you lose your parents and realizing there's a better way to do it. So we created a product called Helen's Plan that's a subscription service where you document everything and kind of helps you walk through the process of dealing with the loss of a parent.
Well, that's amazing. And that's, how's that going?
It's 6 years ago. Wow. We started building it. We launched it during COVID, which was kind of a crazy thing. But yeah. Once you're to that point, it's like, what do? You wait till this is over, or
right?
You know, so it's still out there. It's still kind of pushing itself along. We got a couple guys that are running it and doing some interesting things. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Lots of different things.
And other businesses, your family was in storage and it's a bunch of other stuff. And so you've sold that all off then, right?
Yeah, we sold the storage business last year in March. We still own some property here. We have some commercial property and some residential property. So, those are income streams and things that we do as well. I split time between here and Charlotte, North Carolina, which originally started, my wife needed to move down there for some family stuff, and so we just made that choice, and I was running the skate park stuff. Back in July, I actually, just due to the cost of the park, we eliminated my position at Let's Skate, so not working for that organization anymore, although I'm still semi-involved and still trying to push that forward. Broke ground on it last month, or earlier this month, I'm not sure what the date was. And yeah, should be come quite a ways along by the end of the year. I mean, it might be done before the snow flies. It just depends on when that is.
That's crazy to think. You've been working on it so long, all of a sudden it's come to fruition. And let's rewind just a minute, though, because your passion for skating came out of growing up. You moved here as a very young kid, right?
From 12 years old.
12 years old. And fell into the skating culture of the time.
Yeah, so before I lived here, I played sports. I was very active, but my dad lost a job and couldn't afford to do sports. Parents were both working. You know, I kind of got bullied a little bit and found a little niche, a little place, a little something I could do called skateboarding. which turned into a lot more. It gave me music, so I got into the underground punk scene that was here at the time, which Brian and I produced the movie. Yeah. Brian made the movie. I helped just a little bit on that.
Yeah, which is, what's it called
again? I really get into it.
Oh, I was going to say.
Good. Brian did such a good job.
Yeah, it's an awesome film, so you touched that. I mean, you've got all these connections that you made then. And you and I have talked about Sean Jordan, who's going to be in town again.
Yep.
That sounds decent, maybe? I can't remember. He's
got a show at Bosses, I think.
Yep. So he's a comedian, lives in Portland, and he's doing great. He was part of that scene. I mean, everybody involved with the movie those connections you made in that time, and that's probably not uncommon for people.
No,
but
for
that
sure.
has become, those people have gone on to do great things. We've just named a couple of them.
Yeah. And a lot of people that are owning businesses in this town. You know, I mean, right next to us, we got Chef Lance. We've got, you know, I'm blanking. We've got Haskett down at Haskett's.
Yep.
You know, we've got all these kind of people out of community. The Breaks, you know, Corey and Mary.
Yep.
So a lot of small business owners, a lot of videographers, video people came out of that kind of scene. You know, Wes
Eisenhower, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was quite a few years younger than I was, but kind of influenced by all of that as well. So skateboarding, punk music, I discovered politics, you know, during that. I mean, I was already kind of interested, but like really having a window into different ideas and expressing those ideas. So kind of all together, you know, and probably the biggest thing it gave me was photography. You know, photographing skateboarding and photographing music led me to a career of, you know, having a studio, a very prosperous career doing that. So,
yeah, a lot of that's a lot of the theme of the movie too, the documentary.
Yeah.
About the scene is all these people who were, I don't want to say cast offs, but found each other, and then went, and whatever it was that you stitched together at the time gave you the foundation to go boom.
Well, and you know, it's all. It's all Terry Taylor. Like, I mean, he at 15 years old started doing this thing where he just was holding concerts, you know, and what 15-year-old takes that kind of initiative? There aren't many.
Yep.
There aren't many. And so he gave us the world, you know, and a lot of us would, you know, have gone on some fantastic things, like you said. So, you know, it all kind of builds together. You kind of have a DIY ethic, like you don't necessarily need somebody else to do something, which gives you a boldness, you know, sometimes to a fault, right? But, you know, you just know to go for it, you know, fall down and get back up, scrape your knees, get back up, you know, lose a business, get back up. Like, you just have to keep moving forward. And that's how, I mean, that's kind of how it works. And that's how it's exciting and why it does. And, you know, everything I've done is owed to those things, for sure.
It's amazing, all the people. I can't believe I didn't mention Terry, but who now... has been in some great bands, all that, but now runs a toy store in Lawrence, Kansas, and it's not like a cute, frilly
toy. It's a fanatic toy store. Yeah, it's a fanatic's right. toy store.
It's a little
sure.
goth, you know, and I have not been there, but I follow Terry, and it's really been fun to watch him. He once came to my house after a Squeeze concert, and I lived close. It was a party at my house, and he was of age at that time, but I'll never forget. I was like, "Do you want something to drink, Terry? I'll have milk.
Yeah.
You know, not water, not
beer, not whatever.
No, I'll have milk."
I think he's one of the only other people I know, because I was also straight edge and I haven't drank. And I think he's the only other person from that whole scene of people that didn't do that still does.
Yeah, it's a great guy.
And he's also on a toy store near you. It's an Amazon Prime thing.
Oh,
there's
really?
There's an episode that focuses on their store.
Oh, God, I got to go watch that.
Yeah.
Just an interesting cat came out of the whole thing. It was not just here, of course. The DIY sort of ethos was sort of sweeping the suburbia.
There was really kind of a great thing in the Midwest. And you talk to, like, I'm friends with Larry Livermore, who put out all the Lookout records. So Green Day and Operation Ivy and Before Rancid, you know, all of that stuff. And he's like, there was something Midwest, you know, there were these small towns, Rapid City, mm-hmm. Sioux Falls, Mankato, in particular, those three. There were others that I don't know as much about, but that these bands would go through, and they loved coming here because we didn't have much stuff going on.
Yeah.
So everybody would show up, and you get 300 kids at a show in a basement, you know, and, you know, if you're on the road trying to actually make a living, you know, that goes a long way. If quarter of those people buy a t-shirt and everybody puts $5 in,
yeah,
you know, that's gas money and food money for the next 6 days.
Yeah, I can't, who was it that was back and played, went on, they played a house party here, they played the Nordic Hall. I saw them at what is now the Veterans Center over there, was Brennan's deal. But they, I can't remember who it was, it's not Fugazi, but somebody like that, where they were like, man, I can't believe we're back here. The last time we were here, we played in somebody's house. Yeah, yeah. You know, those things stayed with those guys.
Yeah.
And Green Day. And, oh, man, just amazing when I think back on it. And I was at Tempest during that time, and it was just really fun to watch.
Yeah.
But that led you down the road. You got the passion for skating. And at some point decided, it needs to be better than what we have.
Yeah.
The kids here need better.
Yeah, we have two old shitty parks.
Yeah,
you know, to be frank, like,
yep.
There were, and it happened to be, I was in Eugene, Oregon. My friend Andy, who was a good friend of my dad's, it was shortly after my dad passed, and he took me to their new park, which Eugene's about the size of Sioux Falls.
Yeah.
It has a big school. We have a couple small schools,
yep.
You know, but kind of similar enough that I was like, why can't we do this? And they had built like a $1 million publicly funded park, you know, which is like a $2.6 million park now because inflation
yeah,
has been
right.
Crazy over the last 6 years, 7 years. I came back. There were a couple other things that had happened locally with the skate parks that were in the news, and it was just the right time to kind of get it moving forward. Jeff Zuger and I started it together. He kind of had a lot of business-related stuff to take care of, and my life was pretty easy at the time. My running storage units in a photo studio was very flexible, both of those. So it worked out that I was able to devote a shit ton of time to it and just kept moving forward and you know, making waves and trying to make connections and trying to tell the story of why skateboarding is so important. I think the story could be told of music or anything else, but, you know, in particular, our city has missed the boat a little bit on skateboarding, and, you know, it resonated. It was the right timing. Skateboarding was hitting the Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, we have a mayor who grew up on a skateboard. We have a lot of business owners locally who grew up skateboarding, you know, or their kids grew up skateboarding.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, and something about people 50 and under, like, we all grew up playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it just seems like a cool thing now. Whereas, you know, our parents' generation, it was like, you know, the kids at skateboard were all misfits and scoundrels and whatever. So.
Yeah. First skateboard I had, and I was never, would never call myself a skater, was we made them out of a plank of wood and some skates that we took off of actual skates. They were metal.
Yep.
Those did not work well, Walter.
No.
We had rudimentary engineering skills, and it did not translate.
It was all about the urethane wheels.
That was
the big thing.
That's right. And so when did the germination start? What year was that, do you know?
I believe it was 2016.
Yeah, so it's taken...
7 years.
It feels like it kind of went fast, you know, in some way. But at the same time, any big project like that, to get the buy-in. And I think the amazing thing about what you guys have done... to what the Falls Area single track people have done with mountain biking is the ability to navigate the city government and the business community and finances and all these things.
Yeah.
That is not a skill that a lot of people bring to a project like this. A lot of stuff dies because they don't have that ability to see through the barriers.
Well, for skateboarders too, the biggest thing is that typically we have a bit of a chip on our shoulder, you know, especially the older skaters. They see all this money going into all these other things, and
mm-hmm.
they resent that they're not bothering to pay attention to this sport, which I have to mention is one of the cheapest sports to get into. It's very low barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the fastest growing sports right now. Between that and pickleball, over the last like 5 years, those have been the two fastest growing sports. And you know, Sioux Falls is ready for it. Years ago, probably 15 years ago now, a group of younger guys tried to get something done, but they basically wanted the city to do it for them, which I would argue a city should maybe do that, but like they have to see a reason to, and they have to see buy-in from the community. And you have to have someone that's willing to navigate that and set aside their politics and all. I mean, that was probably the biggest thing for me, is just like setting aside my kind of ultra-left politics in order to... get this done because it's more important than my politics. It's more important than my personal life. It's more important than all of that, right? Because we're talking about the next 30 years of misfits in this town having a place to go and find community and find creativity and explore themselves and who they are and learn to fall down and get back up. You know, I mean, we need that in all aspects.
Yeah, I hear that phrase over and over whenever I'm talking to you or other people involved in skating and a few stories that I've done. The fall down, get back up.
Resilience.
I mean, there's no greater ethos in terms of being successful ultimately in whatever area you pick than that.
Yeah.
Because you're going to fall down.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
You got to learn to fall.
Well, you know, and there are things that come along. Like, there are things that, you know, what I kind of learned through the skate park journey, and it's been, the last month and a half has been kind of rough for me, just emotionally, like pulling away from it and kind of being forced to separate from it, you know. But you also learn where your skill sets are, you know. Like, I'm acutely aware that managing budgets and looking at those long-term things and like projecting things out, mm-hmm. If somebody shows them to me, I can understand them, mm-hmm. but building them and being in charge of all of them, that's not my skill set. My skill set is telling the story, getting people excited about it, inspiring people to want to get involved, and getting on both sides, like bridging the gap between these, you know, angsty kids that need this thing to do and, you know, the adults who are responsible for all the money side of things and for developing things in the community. And so that's where my skill set lies. My skill set is community building. My skill set isn't business management. I can do a little bit of it, you know, enough to kind of get things going, mm-hmm. but I'm not that stuff is stressful and causes me anxiety and causes me panic attacks and end up with, you know, other issues going on. So right. Like I've learned through this, like it was all on myself and a couple of other people. And just like that process is really interesting to learn and grow through that. And, you know, I'm not sure I'm entirely healed. Like, those things go on for a long time, you know? So everybody involved in it, I love every person involved in it. I'm still peripherally involved, obviously. But just learning, you know, just learning who I am and, you know, making mistakes. I certainly have made more than my fair share of mistakes, but you know, I was the one that was willing to grab the bull by the horns and go with it. And I brought a couple people along that I really feel a lot of value in, you know, and a lot of friends jumped in to help along the way and are currently working on it. So, I don't know. It's a crazy journey.
It's going to happen, though.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there's a hole I was walking through over there in the mud today.
Yeah.
Like, it's the scale is impressive.
It is. I think that when you mention that, because you see it next to Drake Springs Pool now, and if people don't know where this is, 10th and Cliff, where the big bowl used to be the outfield of Nelson Field, it's basically carved into the side of that hill next to Drake Springs, yeah. And it's as big as the pool, I mean, roughly.
Yeah.
It's a big place.
20,000 square feet, roughly.
A lot of concrete.
Yeah.
So it's going to be free, yes?
Obviously, yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
No fences around it. It'll be lit up. It'll be free for the public. You know, hopefully the organization can continue to move forward and get boards for kids and have activities. And, you know, hopefully the community will step up and do some girls' night kind of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's lots of opportunity for the future of it. You know, as I step away, my good friend Sean, who's one of the kind of main figures in that film that we made,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was feeling pretty down about everything, just kind of being broken away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something to me that, like, nobody could have said anything better, and it goes back to earlier in our conversation. He said, you're going to be the silent Terry Taylor for the next 30 years of misfits in Sioux Falls. And I'm like, oh, you can't, like, this. He's on a pedestal. So,
right,
like, for Sean
right.
to say that to me was like,
put me on that level?
Yeah. So you know, if I'm not the one that walks across the finish line, so what? Right? It's getting done. It's under construction. You know, other people will step up and finish that part of it, and, you know, we'll go on to the next project and the next thing that we can inspire a community with.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier it might be done this year, but for sure next
people
spring.
People will be skating it in spring, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might, the completion date, last I heard, is mid-November, but I've also heard they're ahead of schedule, so who knows what that means, you know.
Yeah.
And that's substantial completion, so they'll still have landscaping and some extra concrete
right.
work and stuff to do after winter's over, stuff you can't do when it gets cold out.
Yeah, but that's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That leads us into beauty. Leads us a little bit into that's a false transition there, but I'm going to use it into murals.
Sure.
And the mural that's sort of, maybe it's your highest profile mural. I don't know everything you've done, but at the Levitt, is the mural of a singer on the wall, and it's essentially black and white, right? I mean, there's not any other color in there. What did you call the mural? Does it have a name?
It does. Be the Change. And it comes from a Facebook comment I made. Somebody was... So backing up a little bit, first time I saw that wall, I was like, I want to paint a mural there. And kind of like the first time... Backing up even further, the first time I saw a mural painted was a guy that grew up in the music scene with us. His name was Matt Staub, who you may have known.
Different Matt Staub than I...
Not the politician different Matt Staub.
We call him a disgruntled former city commissioner Matt Staub.
Oh, okay.
I
don't know the other Matt Staub, no.
That's right.
This was Matt Staub, who was better known as Sideshow.
Got it.
But he had painted a mural of Jimi Hendrix under a railroad bridge over off of Rice Street by 229. The bridge is long since gone. Recently found... His mom sent me a photo of it. That was the first time I saw a mural, like somebody painted. It actually got me interested in graffiti, which got me into trouble. I indeed got in some legal trouble over some graffiti when I was 18. But when I went into art school, like I was into photography primarily, but I really love big work. Like I love working as big as possible. And so, I did a few other pieces, some photographic wheat paste stuff that is at Remedy Brewing, Outback of Remedy. Those pieces were my photographs. I did a big piece in San Francisco and some stuff in Seattle. Some are art pieces that can be moved. Others are permanent, like mural type things. And then I did, the biggest thing before this was out at the climbing gym on the east side of town. I did a big mural of a climber. And I did the sneaker store in the mall, too. I painted Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. Really focused on portraits. It's almost always been... I mean, that's where my photo stuff comes from, so it kind of makes sense.
Right.
And then, I've been eyeing this wall over here by the Levitt. I reached out to Joe Batchelor, 4 years ago, saying, I know exactly what I want to paint on that wall. I had seen a photograph of a local musician, Arlinda Peacock. It wasn't a side profile view, but it was. She just had her hair combed out.
Mm-hmm.
Arlinda and I know each other a little bit. She volunteered for some skate park stuff. She's really charismatic, very brave person. Is very public about some things she's gone through in her life, which I admire a lot. When people can talk about those things, and post about those things, and I really wanted to do a mural of her, but I'm not living here full time, and this kind of, I was back for a weekend or something for a week. And I ran into Joe, and he was with Scott Risden, who owns Sioux Steel.
Oh, wow.
And I started showing Joe some of the augmented reality pieces I'd been doing, and not even knowing that Scott owned that wall. And Scott's looking at that, and it just kind of rolled into, hey, we'd love something on that wall. Basically, I don't even care what it is. And I was like, I know exactly what I want to do. But for photographing Arlinda for it wasn't in the timeline. So I took some of my other photos and then put them into AI, started manipulating that, and came out with a stencil style image, which if you look at it, you could create that same image with stencils for the most part, other than the microphone. That would be a very, very difficult part of it. That was my nightmare. But we painted this photograph of an African-American woman singing, and the idea behind that is, one, I think representation is important. Part of those punk ethos coming through, right? Like learning about equality, learning, being anti-homophobic, anti-racist,
mm-hmm.
All of that stuff has been part of my DNA since I was 15 or maybe younger. I mean, it probably always was, but it really, I started to understand the politics of it and the kind of power struggle of it when I was about 15.
You're building your self-consciousness.
Everybody does. Your thing is,
right.
You're all developing it at 15, 16, 18, whatever. And, I felt that representation was important. I feel that you know, the majority of music we listen to, I really like Chuck Berry, I think, is one of the most important musicians of all time. We wouldn't have rock and roll. Mm-hmm. The popularity of blues and rock and roll and probably even hip hop is really hinged on his success and his ability to get a wide audience to care about his music.
Right.
You know, because otherwise, you know, there were a few big band leaders, but they always, you know, they were still like, it wasn't quite as mainstream, I think. And then really he was the one that kind of got all that rolling. So to me, everything that happens at the Levitt, or most of it, has some roots other than, you know, obviously some of the Hispanic and Native American stuff that comes through. But like, if it's rock and roll, if it's blues, if right. it's whatever, hip hop, it's coming from African roots. It's got African
traditional music.
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah.
And so to me, like, having that represented in a very visible way, in a very uplifting way, you know, I hoped that it would be like a community building kind of mural. And for the most part, it was. And so you asked about the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, social media is what it is. There was a negative comment. And one of the things I learned through the skate park was, like, you don't have to be angsty when somebody criticizes what you're doing. It's better to come back and just say, I understand you. I would love to see you paint a mural of what's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I had said something about, you can be the change that you want to be in this community. And somebody wrote me a message and said, be the change. Should be the name of this mural.
Oh, wow.
And so that's how that came about. Otherwise, I didn't have a name in mind. You know, it just came from through that process of learning and yeah. building. I mean, part of that is building community, like having discussions and talking rather than yelling at people that have a difference of opinion or don't understand what you're doing, you know? I mean,
well, and if you start doing that, you're going to increase the chances that whatever you want to do is going to be derailed, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you get in a fight with somebody, social media, wherever it happens to be, because they disagree with you about something, it pretty soon you're talking about not the thing that you want to be talking about.
Right.
And you're talking about them.
Yeah.
Or what they're...
Well, I get sucked into bad energy way too easily. So I've got to do, when I can, I've got to do the right thing and be like positive. And, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, there was just an article on Kello about the skate park. And, you know, I went through and...
Don't read the comments.
No, I want to read the comments and I want to have like articulate responses
yep.
to them.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. There are a handful of people that are just outright racist or say really terrible things.
Yep.
And I've done my fair share of keyboard warrioring, unfortunately, for that. Sometimes it's had really interesting outcomes. I raised a bunch of money for the Center for New Americans at LSS
yeah.
because of this racist post, it's just kind of a fun,
wild.
interesting thing. Like, how can you spin it and do something
yep.
weird and different?
Turn it into positive energy, man.
Yeah.
Right?
And then you come back and you post that and you make them feel bad about themselves
right.
or you taunt them.
Hey, thanks, buddy. You helped me raise $100,000 or whatever it is,
yeah, yeah.
you know?
I'm kind of an asshole in that way. It's
thanks
okay.
Thanks for the inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, I think that just that skill is something that a lot of us, you have to develop over time. That the reaction to whatever it is.
Yeah.
And some people are born with it and they learn it young. I'm somebody that had to develop that over time to tamp down whatever immediate reaction I have.
And sometimes it still rears its head, right?
Yeah.
Like you can't,
oh, yeah.
You know, you can't help it. Like, it just is, it, you know, especially coming out of the stuff, all the stuff that we've talked about. Like, you
yep.
know, I'm very ready to stand up for somebody. You know,
yeah.
I'm ready to be angry for somebody, you know, or protect somebody. It's just how I was raised, you
mm-hmm.
know, but I think, yeah, that skill set is something you just have. It was a long road for me to get there, you know.
We're going to talk more about AI in a minute because it's fascinating and obviously it's topical, but that conversation right there makes me think about the city, right? And you've been here through a lot back and forth, but you come and you go. Is this a different place?
Oh, yeah.
Than it was when you grew up
oh.
in terms of those that ability to have conversations about the big issues that face our city and being a welcoming place?
Yes. There are a lot of things I see. There's a lot of room to grow.
Yep.
For sure there's a lot of room to grow, particularly when it comes to Native American
mm-hmm.
rights and Native respect for Native Americans. I think this, I see it in interactions all the time. Unfortunately, people have a stereotype that's grown on them since they grew up here in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and it's just not a real stereotype. I mean, it's not a real thing. Unfortunately, that is what it is. But, you know, in 1990, there was nothing to do here. There was,
coincidentally, Joe Batchelor walking by. Just aforementioned Joe Batchelor, just strolling through 421 Jones Building, but that's fine.
So I think that, you know, in the 90s, it was kind of bleak to me. I mean, well, the only thing we had were the shows in the basement. Like, we had skateboarding, but it was not permitted anywhere, you know. So anywhere you went, you were likely to get chased off by somebody or, you know, held illegally in a storefront while the police came, or, you know, like those kinds of things happened. And you know, I mean, skateboarders were rough. So it was not, all I wanted to do was leave.
Yep.
You know, we came back because of family stuff. And I think it in the last 15 years, 20 years, it's got a progression that's amazing. You know, it definitely has. And that comes from people moving to the community that come from other places that have other experiences that are a diverse, you know, group of people. And yeah, I mean, I think it's got a lot of promise. It's definitely, like, I'm noticing it becoming a city.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, for better and for worse, but, like, the better part is what I see. The diversity, the robust opportunities here for business, you know, people to start small business, for community to be built through music and culture. This Levitt is unbelievable, and Nancy does a fantastic job. I kind of didn't really think about it the first couple of years.
Right.
And then this summer, I've been there for like 8 shows. And it's like, this is transformative to a community, community in particular. And part of that is, a big part of that is Nancy. You have to give tons of respect to her. Like, she builds community like nobody else in this town.
I was just having this conversation with my wife. And at the time when it was announced, I remember us saying, well, that's ridiculous. How are they going to have 50 shows a year? How can you book 50 acts into Sioux Falls
and get anybody to show up?
Right. You could. And I was very skeptical. I was wrong, because it is transformational, as you said. I can't imagine the community without it now.
Yeah.
So huge kudos to everybody behind that.
Yeah.
We're very, very lucky. And now your mural is there. I sent you a note the other day. We were sitting there on Thursday watching the French Celtic band, and they were awesome. But there's some storm clouds came over, and then the sun peeked out from underneath the clouds as it was going down, and it's like a ray was cast right on the forehead of your mural, and it kind of glowed in a way that was overwhelming. So you've been able, I don't know, like the Druids, you line this up with the sun to make it.
Yep.
Yeah,
I was, you know, the Mason, Freemasons were involved.
That's right. Well, that's, and so that's what we have today. When you were talking about the 90s, I was reminded too of when the shows at the Nordic Hall got shut down, when Terry got kicked out of the Nordic Hall.
Yeah.
It was some weird, God, I can't, dancing ordinance. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that happening today.
Well, it's just a different town. It's a different town and different opportunities. And, you know, we're going to have a skate park that's going to draw out a lot of people to this town.
Yep.
You know, all the food stuff that's going on downtown.
It's crazy.
Haskett's has got to be, it's got to be one of the best restaurants in Lance. Like, I mean, these are people I grew up with, you know, owning these restaurants. And you go into Lance's and have a dinner, it's like, you've had a damn dinner. Like, it's good food.
It's
and Haskett's is that, you know, they started with that prefix, and now they've got a steady menu. And, you know, and you can go in there and say hi and see 10 people you know. And
oh, God.
It's all just, like, I love all of it.
It's so, and it is, you're in there, it's tight. There's just, it's the smells of the place, the sounds of it. You know, seeing people you know. And
it feels like a restaurant in New York or San Francisco or Seattle or what. I mean, not, you know, that's not everybody's thing. No. I love a dirty hole-in-the-wall restaurant as much as anything else. But, like, it's just nice that we have these things and that they're really, you know, doing well. I mean, Josiah's, like, when Steve started Josiah's, I was like, how's this going to work? You know, and now it's like what they built it into and the new owner. It's like, it's all great.
I know. It's, It really is. Downtown's completely different. God, that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah, sorry.
That's all right.
You asked me for a conversation.
I
could
love
go
it.
All,
no, this is what I like.
All over the place.
So let's jump then, take all that together, and artificial intelligence gets introduced to the mainstream. And I've not seen anybody else experiment to the degree that you do with AI. Now, what I see a lot of is the art, but you're using it in all different kinds of ways. But let's talk about art, right? You recently posted and sent to me like a manifesto on AI art.
Yeah.
The things that you have produced are crazy cool. Is it good? Is it good for art, AI?
It depends on the user and depends on what your context is. The art world is up in arms about it.
Yeah.
You certainly can use it straight up to steal an image, to make an image that looks like it was made by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever your favorite artist is, you can say, make an image like Shepard Fairey or Banksy or Van Gogh or whoever, and it'll produce something that's amazing. For me personally, I more use it as a tool where I can build ideas, put in emotions, you know, add technical directions for aesthetics, but not necessarily climb for somebody else's aesthetic or try and produce something that's been out there before. Now, you know, for fun, I was making some for a friend who's Terry, who's into Star Wars stuff. I had come across this one style. I liked it. I was like, what would happen if I applied it to like a Star Wars vignette?
Yeah.
And I made him some pieces and I just sent him to him. But that's not stuff I'm putting out there. Like, to me, the stuff that's interesting is when you start to, you know, talk about emotion. What is loneliness? How does AI produce loneliness? What does it think it looks like? And, you know, whether that's in the form of a patchwork quilt or, you know, a wood sculpture or whatever, like, you can use it to create all of those things. Now, I'm just creating stills and some video content, but there are people creating three-dimensional sculptures with AI, where they're taking their own work and using AI to create different variations so they can get ideas. You know, the mural at the Levitt, like, that was a big part of that. It's like, how am I going to frame this right? I want a profile shot. You know, I want it to look like this. I want the lighting to look like this.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know how to talk about lighting if you're going for anything, really. Like, if you're trying to drive an aesthetic that isn't just a stolen aesthetic, you have to understand lighting, composition, you know. In that particular case, I wanted to build like a stencil because I wanted to have the ease of application of a stencil, right? I could have gone up there and brushed it and, you know, made it look like a whatever kind of painting, but I wanted that aesthetic, that street art aesthetic of stencils. So you have to know the vernacular to talk about art. There are tons of people making a whole bunch of crap out there, and some of my stuff is crap too. Like, you know, not everything's great. You know, and I'm just experimenting because I love the process of it. I'm not trying to sell a bunch of prints or whatever, but it's fun. It's interesting. It allows me to express myself in a way that doesn't require the space that I would like to have and I don't have to create resin-coated, you know, 6-foot by 6-foot canvases. Like, I want to do that stuff, but nobody gives a shit about my work enough to buy something like that anyways. So I just want to make the work and explore my emotions, explore the depth of all of that, explore relationships, aesthetics, you know, all of that stuff. And it's the tool to do it. Now, you know, obviously there's copyright issues. People are trying to generate content. I think mm-hmm. there is a real problem with AI in that it's analyzing all of the photographs and all of the images from everywhere to produce things, which means that your images inherently, it outputs a lot of women that are not of attainable beauty standards.
Mm.
You know, I have a big problem with that. Like, I mean, I don't put in things that are specific for that would do that, but they mm-hmm. still pop up, you know, and it's like, obviously, it's a reflection on us and who we are as a culture that we're that obsessed about women's looks. And, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. all the fashion magazines are in there. All of the,
oh,
all of
sure.
it's in there, right? So
it's a disproportionate representation because it's based on the things that we,
the things that
yeah.
companies have sold to us. I mean,
right.
it's not based on a lot of it, I mean, all the people that make those photos are artists and they create stuff. I'm not saying that, but like it's driven by those dollars that are designed to make people want to buy things.
Yeah.
It's consumer culture. It sells. Like it's, and AI is scraping that as well as artists, like fine artists. And so it just feels like overwhelmingly like that's a thing. Now, all of that being said, I think the most magnificent thing about using AI as a tool is its ability to decentralize like a power structure around creativity and art making.
Mm.
The ability to democratize art making, the ability for a kid to come into this world and be trying to express themselves in whatever format that looks like and not having access to the tools or the processes to do that in traditional ways. If you're interested in woodcuts and you don't have the money to buy woodcut tools, you can create the aesthetics mm-hmm. of woodcuts, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you're a 16-year-old kid who has a vision for a design for your skateboard or whatever, you can create that and there's no barrier. And you can create fine art with it, or you can create crap to put on the fridge or whatever that looks like. It gives you, everyone, access to these tools. And traditionally, most of those tools come from many years of work, which is why artists are frustrated, right? But some people don't have many years of work to put into art, don't have the money to put into the art supplies, don't have the teacher that taught them to think about art in that way. And so how do those people access creative production? How do they make things themselves? And I think this is just a fantastic new exploration of that. It reminds me of digital collage in the 90s. Everybody was freaking out. Digital cameras are never going to be worth using. Like, this isn't real art. And now it's like everybody's got a digital camera in their pocket that's better than any photograph you could have ever taken in 1990.
If you can't dodge and burn, you're not a photographer.
Yeah.
So what I like about what you said there, though, and made me think about this, is that the value of art to an individual is the expression, right? Whether it's music, painting, chalk, sidewalk, chalk, I don't care what it is, writing. Part of it is the release of expression. There's something in you that needs to put this, you need to see it, hear it, read it, and it makes you feel something as the person who did it.
Yeah.
And if you do that by telling a computer what you want or typing it in, isn't there value in that, whether or not anybody ever sees it or not?
Well, I think that it's this, in the same way that digital manipulation and digital art making and collage work was the early version of digital, right? Mm-hmm. Like people would scan negatives specifically so they could manipulate them, cut mm-hmm. them apart, do whatever, right? That led to continued push in that movement, which ultimately led to a lot more people having access to cameras and thinking about photography. And look at what photography is now.
Yeah.
I mean, I quote this every time I talk about AI anywhere, so it's probably on other interviews, but more photos were taken in the last minute than in the first 100 years of photography, right? Probably the last second. Like, literally everybody in the world has a camera now.
Yep.
And that is digital, right? Like, and now right now, only certain people have access to art making, right? But within 5 years, everybody's going to have it. And I don't see how that hurts art. That helps art. That gets more people interested in art. And then they see the real thing and they want to go, oh, I want one of those. Or I want to go see what a real Van Gogh looks like. I've been admiring his work and trying to recreate his work using AI or whatever that is. Like, artists are afraid that it's devaluing the value of their art.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be frank. Nobody's buying artwork anyways. Like,
it's true.
You're better if you want to make money making artwork. And my friend Alex, she said this to me. She's like, if you want to make money making artwork, paint welcome on a piece of wood.
Yep.
And people will pay $50 for it all day long. But God forbid somebody try and charge $100 for a photograph that's framed that can hang on your wall and add real cultural substantial value to your life.
Right.
Like, we just don't do it.
But if the person who... if you have this $100 photograph, it's a beautiful photograph. And photography is a great venue because everybody has one. Everybody can take a picture. Everybody can do it. Everybody can write a story if they want. But the value in it, the inherent value, is what... some of it's better, right? A great photograph, you look at it and you get something from it. When I look at some of the AI stuff that you do, it's emotive.
Yeah.
Right? I see something in loneliness.
Yeah.
That connects with me.
Yeah. The very first photograph, and I'll look it up while I'm talking about this. The very first time in AI that I was like, oh, this is different.
Mm-hmm.
So a few years ago, I was in a band called Birthday Pony. It was a punk band.
Of course it was.
And yeah, of course. Like, what else would it be? But my friend Lance Caskey, mm-hmm. Who I grew up with, who Matt Staub grew up with,
mm-hmm.
brought in a cassette to one of our practices. And he's like, this is a bass line that Matt wrote when we were in a band when we were 15. We never did anything with it.
Oh, wow.
What we didn't mention before is Matt committed suicide when we were like 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just vanished from this earth. And so we decided to put that into a song, make a song out of it. I can send you this so you can use it for the article if you care.
Cool.
But the song was very simple. We really wanted to focus on this bass line. So I just wanted, my experience with Matt was I gave him a ride home from school in ninth grade. Maybe it was eighth grade. I think it was ninth grade. And he's like, take this record home with you and listen to it. Because he knew I was watching skate videos and there was a little bit of punk music on skate videos.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a record that was called Brouhaha, and it had a Jawbreaker song, a Cringer song, a Nuisance song, and a Manzula song, which means nothing to anybody listening to this podcast.
Jawbreaker is great.
Jawbreaker is a fantastic band, but all four of those became like favorite bands of mine.
Yep.
And so I just wanted to write about what that record meant to me. And so it was literally, the lyrics, all it was pick the record up, pull the record out, put the record down, drop down the needle. And I created, and I put that, just that, into AI. And it was an earlier version of AI.
Wow.
And I just said, hyper-real photograph.
Yep.
And it came up with these images that are unbelievable. They look like they absolutely look like they're something that exists.
Right.
But when you look at it, you know that this thing has never existed, right?
Right.
So the idea, this is when I knew AI is not stealing images, it's learning from images, right? The aesthetics, the proportions, the color balance, all of that stuff, and it's referencing the words that I used,
mm-hmm.
record, drop down the needle, so it's got it knows a black circle with a center lighter color, and it knows that it needs a needle, what it identifies as a needle, but it puts these together into these bizarre landscape images.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe them.
And they exist nowhere else.
This has never existed. And I'm showing Patrick like 10 different.
Yeah,
this one is just fascinating. It's a landscape with a lighthouse and a needle sticking off the side of it.
Yeah.
You know,
and the colors, well, some of them are black and white, but some of them, the colors are really interesting, is all I can say.
And the thing is like, these resonated with what I feel about what records meant to me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that was the part that this was like maybe 50 images in, I hit this. And I was like, oh, uh-oh. You know, because like, it's like when you go to the casino the very first time, you pull the thing, you win $100, you're like, well, I guess I'm going to be a gambler. You know, and it's like, and it felt so much, this discovery process feels so much like when I got Photoshop in 1995.
Yeah.
And I started scanning negatives and building pieces that were anti-homophobia pieces or political pieces, you know, literally like these crazy pro-Native American pieces that I was making because I was very politically involved. But this feels just like that exploration, that energy, that excitement. And that's what I love about it. Like, and we're spending so much time on our phones anyways. I'd rather do this than play, you know, Minesweeper or whatever thing, or look at Facebook or whatever. Like, I don't need to do those things. And you get caught in those things for so long. Well, I'd rather be creating something interesting and stimulating my mind that way. Like,
yeah.
It just... frankly, that's it. Like, the downtime when you're sitting at an airport bored, well, you could look at news stories that are going to depress you, or you could make some artwork that gets you excited and you want to share with your friends.
Walter, it's all amazing. And as you know, we could just keep talking because...
Yeah, sorry.
You and I are just guys who can talk for a long time, which is why we want to do something long form, right? This gives us the freedom. A lot more stuff coming from Roger. I've called you Roger now twice.
Yeah, that's okay.
The first time was off air. Now I've called you Roger. Is there some relationship between Roger and Walter that I'm maybe it's like a kink song?
It's just the
Maybe the I don't know. Maybe it's my brain.
I'm not insulted. I know you know who I am. We've had many conversations.
Thank you very much for taking time to talk to Sioux Falls Live.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get to talk to you again. So thanks, Roger.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks, Roger. Well, you know,
Walter. Well, I'm going to edit this out because it's because it makes me sound so stupid. Walter Ports. He is, you know, an amazing guy who is popping in and out at Sioux Falls these days. But I know we're going to hear and see more from you. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm excited for what comes next.